And hello again. Welcome to another edition of the Mountain View Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trammell. We took a couple weeks off. It's March 23rd, but I'm joined as always by my co-host,
Todd Reynolds. How you doing, Steve?
Captain T. It's good, man. It's good. Look, I'm going to jump into our podcast here in Titus chapter 2.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the things that got me thinking about this particular podcast topic is, man, how much we're supposed to benefit from each other in the teaching realm.
Okay.
Like, you know, I mean, you're a Christian, you're added to a big family, you got moms and dads, brothers and sisters, you got all this stuff, right? And so there ought to be, I mean, God intends to be some of that beneficial for us.
Yeah. People that know things can share that and help people that don't.
Yeah, that's the whole point. And I mean, you know, Peter telling Jesus at the end of Matthew 19, hey, we left everything and followed you. What's in it for us? And he's like, oh, you're going to get a lot of things.
Yeah.
And he did. I mean, you think about later on after Jesus's death and resurrection, Peter having a house full of people pray for him.
Right.
When he's in jail.
Right.
And, you know, you just think about him benefiting from a house full of family praying for him.
Right.
That's just awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what we need in a church. And so I was thinking about this, you know, Titus 2, and Paul telling Titus, older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, and love and perseverance. Older women likewise to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. I mean, when you think of that kind of hierarchy, he doesn't depend on a mom to teach a daughter. He says, no, I want all of you women engaged in this teaching.
Yeah, and he's saying older women teach the younger women, but when you think about like a mother teaching her daughter, the mother in that circumstance, maybe the younger person that needs to be taught. The older woman teaching the younger woman could be teaching someone that's in their mid-20s or early 30s and teaching them, hey, this is what womanhood in the kingdom looks like, right? Here's what it looks like to be a wife and a mother, right? And a servant. And it is definitely, I'm just saying that in the context, it's a lot deeper than, you know, a mom teaching her 8-year-old daughter to make some blueberry muffins and carry them to someone. That's a good thing to teach them. But those are kind of lightweight, superficial type things that are great and important for someone when they're 8 years old. But there's a lot of deeper stuff in living life that happens in the adult realm, probably in your 20s and 30s, that people could benefit from.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, on the surface, nobody wants any of this. I mean, could you imagine another person telling you how to parent your children?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's kind of like, well, I may not want that. But then when I realized how hard keeping everything together to have a loving home with your marriage, with your parenting, with your job, with your church family, with a million little tasks that come along day to day, there's just a lot to juggle. And someone who's done that well probably could have some good counsel and guidance to share.
Oh, it's easy to say until it's your kids and they're like, hey, let me show you what to do. Yeah. Let me tell you what to do. But it really is a blessing, because if we're solely dependent on what our parents teach us, you got a very narrow view of life.
Yeah, that's right. And that definitely can create some children that are just not balanced. I know for me, having done a lot of preaching and teaching when my kids were little, I was happy to come to Mountain View for them to get to hear you preach and teach, right? There's times when I'm doing teaching at home, or I'm addressing a discipline issue at home, and I'm like, I need some other teaching besides me, right? Well, to balance it out, but also to just give other perspectives. There's been men and women at the Fidelis Christian School where my boys have gone that I've been like, I've appreciated that those people have invested in my sons in a way that's meaningful.
Yeah. And when you have those other voices, you have some help.
You have some other perspective. You know, kids learn, you know, all manner from different backgrounds, different experiences, different knowledge, different illustrations. There's just a lot there that can help us be more complete and mature in how we pass along knowledge to the next generation.
Yeah. And so I wanted to tackle in this podcast something that we probably need to just think about, because most of the time, like parenting or like other things, by the time you realize you need advice, it's almost too late.
Oh, yeah. You probably could have used it a lot sooner than you actually get it.
Yeah. Like you've messed up and you're like, oh, yeah, now I need some help. And then it could be too difficult. So I want to talk about dumb things we do with our money.
Oh, and okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the podcast title. And I want us to think about some dumb things we do with our money from two experts who can maybe help the next generation on just some things that we've learned a little bit about finances, Bible stuff as it relates to finances, and things you probably should not do in order to just not have a rotten existence.
Now, part of me wishes that part of this podcast had a video component so that people could see my reactions when you say things. Because when Steven said, so that you can hear from two experts, like I'm just sitting here laughing and smiling. We are experts in having done some dumb things over the years, and we've learned from those things, and we'd like to pass that along. But our expertise is really in, at times, having done some dumb things.
Yeah, that's it. That's why we're here, right? And so, you know, I think that goes back to Titus 2. The only qualification that he had in Titus 2 was that you were older.
Yes, older women teach the younger women.
That's it. Like, right. I don't know if they're better, they're worse, but you will, by virtue of age, have learned some lessons that only age could teach you. And he's wanting to pass those on so that they don't have to be older and learn those lessons.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And in younger days, you just haven't experienced as many things. And those experiences, you know, definitely are helpful. And we learn what not to do. We learn what to do that works and what not to do that doesn't work. And then we modify and hopefully grow. And if you're a young person, particularly as it comes to money matters, and you think, man, I'm not great with this, you're not alone. And I think it's a challenge for a lot of people to, at a very early age, just really crush it in this area.
Yeah. And so I want to just offer some help. It's not going to be as necessarily Bible heavy maybe as some of our other things, but it's just some practical advice. And you think about Proverbs, right? I mean, Proverbs has a lot of day-to-day wisdom just in general about money and finances and things like that. But I want to just give some practical American life lessons for kids that are growing up in our society, because some very specific things need to be dealt with. And I think first, as we kind of embark on this journey in this podcast, we are living in a society that doesn't set us up for success financially. And I want to talk about why. So when you think about that statement, it might be a little shocking because you feel like, hey, we're in the lap of luxury. Like, surely America has all the tools for you to succeed financially. Mm. And while that may be true, the mission and values and kind of tenor of our society leads people down a really bad path. And so I want you to just talk to me for a minute about maybe things you think about in America that set us up for failure financially as a young kid, a young girl who's embarking on life.
Well, I mean, a couple of things come to mind very quickly there. And first of all, the idea of the entitlement that comes in the United States of America. Everyone expects the best of everything right out of the gate. And we do our best many times, almost to our own fault as parents, to give the best to our children. And when your kids get the best, or all the choices, you know, all the upgrades, then they come to expect that. And then when it comes to money, like, it should just happen, right? It doesn't matter if things cost more. You know, it doesn't matter if things are a waste of money with respect, you know, clothes, food, shelter, cars. Those are four things that
vacation
that we, well, vacation. I'm talking about things that we need: food, clothing, cars.
I need a vacation.
And houses. I hear you. I hear you. We might get to that in a minute. But my point is, even with the things that we need, there's a whole spectrum of how much money we can spend on those things.
Yeah.
Right. We could spend a lot less money on food, clothing, shelter, and cars, transportation, than perhaps we do. And kids at the earliest ages come to have these high expectations with all those categories. And then all bets are off when you start talking about entertainment and vacations and, you know, toys or electronics or phones or any number of other things that would be on top of what we need, where kids just kind of have this,
yeah,
this mindset of entitlement.
Yeah. And I think that's, we are setting ourselves up for that, because in our society today, man, it is at a young age. I remember at my school growing up, you know, you just feel it, like these kids at 16 getting these nice cars, you know, they're driving in, dad got me a Mustang for my 16th birthday and I'm still riding the school bus,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And seeing some of this play out in life, your kids kind of feel bad, because even if you are trying to be diligent to them about not having these things, you almost compound it because nobody else is doing that as their families are being raised. And so
right.
they're looking at you like, my dad's such a loser and he don't
right.
want, you know, so you're fighting against society. You're fighting against your next door neighbors.
Yeah.
You're fighting against people at church
right.
who might not have the same values, and all of a sudden their kids are doing this, that, and the other. So that was exactly where I wanted you to go, because we have a unique issue here, surrounded by wealth, but still not satisfied and still headed down a path of ruin financially, dependent, because we don't heed the warnings or learn some lessons that we should know, I guess, as we start out.
Right. Right. And I don't know, you know, exactly where you want to go as far as solutions or things that we might offer as recommendations, but contentment is something that could help us, especially early in our adult lives, right? When we're single, there's a lot that we could probably be content with less. And in our early married lives, there's a lot that we could be content with less. And developing that spirit is something that I think will serve us throughout our lives, financially and yeah. spiritually.
Well, that leads us to point number one, which really, when you think about contentment sometimes is almost a necessity. Like you can't, I have to be content because I don't have a choice. Like I could wish for something to be different, but
right.
it's just kind of my life. America gives us the ability that we don't have to ever be content because we can. And it's called debt.
Oh,
and,
mercy.
You know, credit cards. And so we're able to, with any little amount of desire, go get a card, go get approved for a loan, and go get whatever it is that we want.
Oh, man.
With very mild background checks.
Right.
They don't make you go through some financial university to, you know,
right.
buy a house or buy things. And so as we transition from a childhood of parents that have been, you know, maybe creating little monsters by giving us things and all that, when you transition to 17, 18, and you are looking at your own life, you expect the same level of, you know, places we ate.
Right.
Like my parents, we ate out every Thursday night. We ate out every night. We ate out whenever it was. Well, now when you're on your own, you can't do that. Or can I?
Right.
We'll get a credit card. How many times has your kid said this? Mine, Asher, will say this. Dad, just put it on your credit card.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's a magic unlimited thing.
Yeah.
And you just swipe that thing, because every time they see me buy something, I just pull this out and I just hand it to them. I can walk out the door. I just hand them this card.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, point number one, right? The problems with debt.
Right.
The problems with debt.
Well, there's definitely a lot of issues there. You're spending money today that you don't have. And if you want to spend money tomorrow, then you're going to build upon the spending that you don't have. I know when Kelly and I first got married, she had some school loans and she had a car payment, a little Nissan Altima that she had bought. And we were talking about what we were going to do one time. She was like, well, we got the money to do it. I was like, oh, babe, we've already spent that money. And it was because I knew, you know, if you got $10,000 car payment or a car note,
yeah.
you know, and some payments and $15,000 of school loans, they weren't bad. I mean, by comparison, some people today have $50,000 or $100,000 in school loans, but she had like 15 or something like that. I can't remember the exact numbers, but debt is money that you've already spent and you incur a lot of interest.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about,
to incur that
about
debt.
Interest. And I mean, for a lot of people, it may be something that you know about and it doesn't matter. But for somebody that's 12, 14, 16, they might not really understand that. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, take a, I don't know, a $40,000 car and 5% interest rate. and you finance that over 5 years, what is the interest cost going to be? You're going to spend an extra $5,000. That's $5,000. So you can think about...
No, because I'm only paying $400 a month.
Exactly. But the reality is, out of that $400, there's going to be whatever that number is, you know, $120 a month that's just going to interest cost. And that's money that the bank just gets. And that's, you know, when you think about, and there's different things about which assets actually have value long-term, which a car does not long-term generally. So you're not even getting your principal back on a car, much less any interest cost. So the whole thing can be, you know, significant expenditure that has some value, but maybe not long-term value.
And interest is a problem, because when you start to think about this car that you bought for $40,000, you spend that interest, or you buy it on a loan with that interest. You think, hey, it's $400 a month, I can make it. But the car that you own is only worth $40,000, and you owe $45,000 on it.
Yeah, right.
So once you make that purchase, you're still on the hook for 45. So if you get home and the next month, like, your wife's giving it to you, like, we should sell this or whatever, you're going to have to take a $5,000 bath.
Yeah, right.
To try to get rid of that asset. And I'll give you an example about how this, you know, plays out. So when I was, right before I got married, I had bought a Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Yeah, I remember.
And Jeep Grand Cherokees, I mean, they were like, I had a Jeep Cherokee before that. I mean, they were not good cars. I mean, there were a lot of problems.
Reliability wasn't their strong suit.
Well, I didn't care. I mean, I like the way
it looks.
I remember
that you didn't care.
I like the way it looks. You know, it's cool, whatever. We drove away in it after our marriage, and, you know, it's fun. We had it for a few years. Well, I think I'm at Jason's bachelor party, and I hear just this really loud knocking in the engine. Now, also being young, I mean, I know it probably doesn't sound good, but I don't know what happens. Well, anyway, eventually it just won't move.
Mm.
So, turns out I had blown a rod through the engine.
Yeah.
And I still don't even know what that means to this day. I was like, oh, it sounds like I know what I'm talking about. I blew a rod. But basically I need a new engine.
Yeah.
So I have a car I can't use, and I'm still having to make payments on this car.
Mm. Yeah.
That needs $4,000 to $6,000 worth of work. I still owe money. The bank doesn't care because I own it.
Right.
But I don't have $4,000 or $6,000 to pay for it.
Oh man, this does not sound fun.
So I'm having to talk to Robert Smith about, like, hey, does he have an old car he could, like, let me use or sell me? So he sold me what became affectionately known as the Reverend, because it was like a massive Mercury Grand Marquis.
The car was named the Reverend.
Oh yeah. The Rev. Yeah.
The right Reverend.
So $1,500 later, I get, you know, a car that he had used for his business, you know, and put 100,000 miles on, and
a land yacht.
And a land yacht. Do you fit so many dead bodies in the back of that thing?
Man,
it was awesome. But
how many did you fit in there?
No, it would have been me if I had another financial catastrophe. But, yeah, you know, when you think about payments and you think about those sorts of things, it seems good up front, but you got to be careful, because you're going to pay more than you think. You're going to have something you're potentially upside down in. And then when you don't have cash, because you're kind of strapped, you're like, I can afford the monthly payment, you can just end up in a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, right. And those are the things that the car salesmen don't talk to you about. They're like, how much of a payment can you afford? We don't worry about the price. You know, we don't worry about the interest rate. How much payment can you afford? And they're not thinking about your financial well-being. They're thinking about selling a car, right? Sure. And putting food on their own table. And when you think about debt, like, the worst kind of debt is unsecured credit card debt. You know, if you're carrying balances on that, that's way more than 5% or 6%. Like, I'm talking about,
it's like 14, 24, something like that. Crazy.
Yeah. 20, more like, yeah, 19, 29. I mean, some crazy numbers these days. I think I've seen some on some disclosures that might be like 27.9%, some crazy high number. But those will kill you, because then you really don't have anything. I mean, as far as the value, the best debt that you can have is on some type of real estate product. You know, your house is certainly an investment that will retain value, and a car would be kind of next, even though the debt around that's not always desirable, but you at least have you have a need for transportation, but anything on a credit card, if there's balances that you're carrying, the finance charges that a credit card company will cost you are brutal. And then all you're paying, if you're paying the minimum payment, you're paying just the interest, maybe in $10 off of the note. You'll never get that paid, you know, in the foreseeable future if you don't really wage war on it.
Right. And that's just the problem, because there's so many places like, hey, get your payday loan early. You know, you're paying a discount on that, or whatever you do to try to get by. And you think, hey, man, if I could just have $2,000 right now, this would get me over the hump. But the problem is, if you don't have $2,000 today, you probably don't have $2,000 tomorrow.
Right.
And something else may come up, and then you just begin this spiral that you never get out of, right? Because you're constantly paying interest on these things. And if your problem was money in the first place, well, now you got even less of it.
Yeah, right, right.
And it goes back to what you said. Debt is a means for the not contented people to acquire things to live some kind of weird lifestyle.
That they really can't afford, right? So when you've got a bunch of real estate assets, debt can be a tool to help you build value. When you've got things that aren't really assets, like an old car or you know, any pile of stuff that you've purchased with a credit card, it's just hemorrhaging cash.
That sounds rough, and it is.
Well, it's the reality. And things in our world today, where you have maybe a lot of student loans at an early point in life, you know, anything where you're incurring some interest expense and you have some debt, you need to wage war on that at an early time in life, so that when kids come, like you'll literally sneeze and spend $200 at Walmart or Target. And at any point you could have like what you had happen, where you blew a rod. But think about how many times you need, oh, I need two new tires. Well, that's $300, right? Or, you know, I need my air conditioning fixed in July in the summer. Oh, that's $800. Like there's all kind of expenses that are unforeseen expenses that if we're running lean on our cash flow because we've got too much debt in our cash flow, we're just spending on making payments for a car and a house and school loans and credit cards, then we're going to be running thin and lean. It's going to be hard to deal with these extra things that just always come up.
And that's where contentment comes into it, right? Because, you know, so many people feel like my success, my happiness is tied to these things.
Right.
I need to have a house of my own. I need to be able to have a car too. I mean, mainly two. I mean, everybody has two cars. You need to be able to go on vacation and do what everybody else is doing and you're seeing everybody else do. And so to accommodate that, we've done point number two, which is, and again, I'm just going to throw this out here. I'm not trying to ruffle anybody's feathers, but we will have every member of the family working to try to acquire things.
Oh,
and
man.
So, you know, I just want to talk about it for a minute, right? Because in general, you know, you've got this antiquated idea of, hey, women should be keepers at home and, you know, the dad's supposed to be the provider. And I say it's antiquated because it's in the Bible. And in general, you have pastors say, you know, this is obviously a woman's role, and whether or not you work, you still have to maintain that role. But you need to ask yourself this question: do I need to make my family worse in order to have some more things financially?
Right.
So I remember just when I started out, right, Anna and I get married, and I mean, one of the biggest arguments we had was whether or not she was going to work. And this was my thought: I'm getting married to this young college graduate, and part of getting married is, instead of her family giving me a goat or something, like there's no exchange,
like a dowry.
Instead, I just acquired $30,000 of debt from, and this is not normal debt, this is from the University of Alabama. So I'm like literally paying the arch enemy school.
You were basically paying Nick Saban's salary.
Oh man, I didn't even think about that. This would have been pre-Saban,
barely. That makes a goat sound pretty good.
Barely, you know, so I'm in this situation, right? And I tell her, hey, I think you need to get a job. And she's like, no, I want to be at home. That's my goal. Well, you just spent all this money figuring out what you want to do with your life. You got this degree, like, shouldn't you work for a little bit? So we compromise in her working for a little bit. And this is the thing she said to me. She said, I don't want to get into the trick where we're dependent on my salary. And then all of a sudden it's like time for me to quit. And I can't quit because we're just invested, right? We're invested in this lifestyle.
Right.
And man, that kind of stuck with me, right? Because, you know, my mom worked off and on, her mom worked off and on, and she viewed that as just such a big negative, right? Her mom would work like second shift. And so she wasn't home at night a lot.
3 to 11.
She wasn't home at night. You know, she was doing some work for Delta. So her dad was doing that. So that kind of bothered her. And she was just really focused on, I want to be there. And I want to be there for my family. I want to be there for you. And for a while she worked. And dude, it was, you know, it was fine. But it was, she was like, I want this money to go toward this debt. And it was kind of weird at home, right? We're all kind of arguing about who's going to clean what. Because right. She's worked. I've worked. I mean,
right.
You know, we got chores we're divvying up and all this kind of stuff. So here's what I'm going to say about it. And I want to get your feedback too. Why is every member of your family working?
Like now, what is the purpose?
What's the purpose? There may be 100% need because it's tough out there right now.
Right.
Inflation, like I get it. I see these jokes all the time about, you know, a man can used to work at a furniture store and go home and live in a house and take care of his family. And
right.
Now rent for anybody is right. $1,800 around our church building for,
yeah.
You know, a single person's apartment.
Right.
And you got to have some real cash to just make it right now in our current inflationary pressure. So
right.
I get it. I'm not knocking anything. But do we pursue these things for purely financial reasons?
Mm.
What are your thoughts? I kind of preached there for a minute.
Well, I mean, it's definitely something that each family needs to be thoughtful about. And I think, you know, what Anna said to you about, let's not get used to absolutely depending on this by getting so stretched thin financially. I mean, I don't know exactly what that conversation was like for you and her. Based on what you've said, I guess I have the idea.
It's not fun.
Well, it's not fun, but I think you probably said something similar to what I would have said. It's like, let's pay the University of Alabama and then we can work something out, right? Because certainly in those early days when you don't have children, I think there's an opportunity to start waging some war on some debts for some period of time. And Kelly and I did that, you know, before we had children. But it's also super important, I think, to understand how much spiritual training is required for children all the way from birth up to age, you know, 16 or 18. And for those children to get the training that they need, there's going to be time that needs to be invested by someone. Maybe it's dad and mom working out some type of, you know, really intentional, like this is how we're going to structure to make sure our children are raised in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. But if everyone's just working for things and it's just physical type of provisions and then entertainment on top of that, then we could end up pretty far away from what God wants us to be as a family unit, raising children to hopefully love, serve, and respect God, because then they're just wrapped up in all the worldliness and materialism that we've provided for them.
Yeah. And I'm not knocking anybody who, out of a need, a woman needs to go consider a field and buy it. Like,
right.
I'm not saying
yes, right.
at all that a woman can't or shouldn't be productive in some form of her life. But you also see people outside who that's their love and their life, right? Is
right.
Everybody's trying to make more money and get more money. And what's the cost of that, right?
Right?
What's the cost on the back end of the family lifestyle, of your own lifestyle? Like, what are you really working for?
Yeah, right.
And if you look me in the face and say, well, I want to be able to have a house and take care of my family. Cool. I mean, no one's going to argue with that.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
When it's like, no, I really want to be in this neighborhood and I want my kid to go to this private school. And I
want them to have these fancy clothes. And
no one would ever say fancy clothes, but you know.
Organic food.
You know why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, right.
And so just in fairness, sometimes we can make bad decisions with some of that and do it because we just want the money, and that
right.
can catch us long term.
I don't know what people's individual experiences are. I know what my experiences are and a little bit about what I see around me. But I think there are probably a lot of examples if people are grinding in corporate America where you see friends or coworkers in the workplace and the husband and the wife both work, and it's just a grind for basically a grind for the man to make a bunch of money to kind of have, you know, the right neighborhood, the right house, the right cars, and the kids can just be a disaster, and the marriages can be kind of like we don't ever see each other, and the home can end up being, you know, more of a kind of a transactional type environment that's not really centered on God or filled with love.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't do that. I mean, it's kind of a weird point number two, but you got to be careful about how many people are trying to make money, or you can lose the whole reason you got married and wanted to have a family in the first place.
Right.
Like your life can be around acquiring things instead of a secondary part of just living a great life.
Right. Right. One thing I would say is there are opportunities in our modern world, especially with after COVID's hit, there's way more work from home opportunities. There are certain shifts that people like nurses have that give them a lot of flexibility, right? That you're working maybe 3 12-hour shifts. Those are long shifts, but then guess what? You got 4 days off to spend with your family, and maybe you've got some good arrangement. I mean, there's things where people can do this and do it in a thoughtful, intentional way that's still helpful. You know, Kelly started this business 2 or 3 years ago. Well, she's at home a lot of days when she wants to be.
Yeah.
And she, you know, our kids are basically grown. I work from home a lot now, and I spend a lot of time with Gabriel during the day. Which is nice. I'll do a lunch break and we'll go down and work out and spend an hour together. There's ways in which I think you can balance this and still have some agreement or some plan that works for individual families. So that's the only counterpoint I make, but all of it needs to be intentional, and things that absolutely are important to God need to be important to us and not be neglected.
That's right. And I'll just say this to counterpoint your counterpoint. If you're working 10 hours from home because you can, but it's solely for covetous means, still wrong.
No, that's right.
Right.
That's
go right. Spend 10 hours in service to the kingdom.
Right.
And forget about it. But I mean, go do something selfless for others. Go take some money and give it instead of thinking the best thing you can do with your life is make some more money.
That's right. And the counterpoint to the counterpoint to the counterpoint is if your kids are raised and you're not working outside of the home and all you're doing is sitting on the couch watching TV all day, you should probably do something.
Also wrong.
Yeah,
it would be better for you to go out and plow a field than to do that.
Yeah, when I say you should probably do something, what I mean is do something.
Women, you've got a bunch of problems. That's the takeaway from this podcast.
No, that's just there's a lot of points and counterpoints.
No, it's good. All right, but point number three that I want us to think about: just dumb things we can do with our money, not save, right? Not save anything. Very difficult to save. I think, you know, if you look at statistics, most Americans have less than $1,000 in their account, you know, as far as just savings or things like that. When did you start to kind of get on the train about saving or the need to save?
I don't know. I do struggle with this topic because Jesus says clear, direct things like lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, you know, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. So I do think we should have concern about thinking I need to save up money for this life because resources in this life should be used in the kingdom. Having said that, there are things in corporate America like 401k plans where my company says, if you contribute 6%, I'll give you 6% for free. That's 100% gain right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And then you get a tax benefit on top of that. And then you likely get appreciation and value over time for all of it. To me, those types of things seem like a saving opportunity that's a no-brainer.
Well, it's not a no-brainer. I mean, and I'll give you an example. So when I was at church early, just started preaching there, a guy named Norm Rich was there, and he worked at Bell South too with me. And Norm was a pilot for them, so just a very cool job.
Yeah.
And Norm, you could tell he kind of had some money. I mean, he lived in a nice house, and he'd been a pilot for a while, so he should make good money. But he came up to me after church one time in the parking lot, and he said, I don't want to get in your business, but how much are you putting in your 401k?
Right.
And I remember, like, I don't know, it wasn't a lot, because I remember at the time you're thinking, they're just going to take this money out of my account and I'm going to see it when I'm 65 or 70. This don't seem like a good thing, you know?
Right.
I don't need $150 coming out of my account. It's 10% off,
right,
or whatever. And he said, look, I'm just going to tell you to do this. Put 15%, you max it out, and then you're going to be a millionaire when you retire.
Right.
And then he just walked away.
Yeah. Yeah.
But from his perspective, he's like, this is just a smart thing you can do with your money. But when you're young, you don't have a lot. You're thinking about stuff I need to spend it on, stuff I need to buy, stuff I might be dreaming of buying. And you just need to slow your roll for a minute and think, I got to be a little more thoughtful about having something for some kind of rainy day.
Yeah. And I'm happy to hear some feedback on this one. If someone wants to come and say, hey, Todd, hey, Steven, you guys are just saying lay up treasures on earth. I'm happy to do another podcast on that, because I think we need to be a little more hardcore in taking the teaching of Jesus at face value. But everything we're saying here is common sense. And you know, a verse that we haven't read that I think about a lot is Luke chapter 16, verse 11. And I just want to read that real quick.
I thought you were going to Proverbs 6.
Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with true riches? Jesus is saying you've got to be faithful in the money that you have. And this, I think, is something we're trying to say, hey, let's try to have some shrewdness about this. And I don't want to get into too much math, but if you make $100,000 a year and you put 10,000 of that into a 401k and you live off 90, that 10, it's going to be matched at a certain percent. That's 100% gain on the match. The tax savings, when you do that 10, you're only taxed on 90 instead of 100. If you're in a 25% tax bracket, that's another $2,500. If there's any appreciation in that value, that's added on top of that. All of these things are saying, basically, when you walk home with 90 instead of 100, you're still walking home with 100. Now, I know that's a little fuzzy math. It's not technically still 100, but that's the math.
It's
there.
The opposite of credit card interest, except it's in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. So you, it's like you still get the 100, but you only pay tax on the 90, right? Or you get something for the future that will be a great blessing to you,
yeah,
at a time that you might need it.
Well, and when I talk about laying up for yourselves treasures on earth, I'm not talking about some exorbitant amount that allows you to then trust in yourself that you've got whatever. Right. What I'm talking about is setting up $2,000 or $3,000 so when something falls apart, you are ready to deal with it.
Yeah, like buy new tires or you mean like an emergency fund?
Well, and I titled the podcast Dumb Things We've Done With Our Money. I'll tell you another story that you were a part of, just so everybody can know. So I'm young. I first start working at Bell South, and they had this great program that in sales, if you sold high-speed internet to somebody, they gave you like this $20 American Express card.
Oh, right.
It was like a traveler check. And then they have these stacks, these gold traveler's checks. And so I was like, well, I'm going to sell a bunch of these things. So I was just blowing it out, dude. I was getting a bunch of these. I'd go to the bank, get $800 worth or whatever. Well, I'm spending money like this is going to continue. And they stopped the program. They're right. Like, oh, yeah, we're out. Well, my credit card bill came due the next month.
Yeah.
And I don't know what possessed me to do it. I don't know why I felt this way. You were preaching at the church at the time. But some amount of humility allowed me to say, hey, Todd, can I borrow $500? And you were like, yeah, no, you can have $500 if you need $500.
Yeah.
But when I think back to that moment, I think back about that. It was a culmination of a lot of things, right? Maybe not great financial upbringing, maybe not understanding what tomorrow's going to bring.
Right.
But like, I didn't have enough to cover what became out of nowhere just a shortfall financially, because I was kind of banking on, hey, I'm going to keep making this
yeah,
change.
Right.
Then when the company said, hey, we're getting spent a lot of money on this, let's cut it back, I was kind of left holding the bag and not ready to face the piper next month. And you came to bat for me. So when I'm talking about dumb things we do with our money, when you have money, you should be able to put some aside,
right,
so that when there's a need, you're not having to go ask or beg for something from somebody else.
Yeah, that's right. And there's so many ways in which that comes into play personally with things in your own family that you have need of. But then there's our extended family, right? And that's what you're saying about me helping you years ago. I barely remember that, but
I've never forgotten.
Ephesians 4, was it 28? Let him who stole steal no more, but let him labor with his hands that which is good, that we have to give to him who has needs. It's about having money when we need it for ourselves, our family, but it's also about having money for someone else when they have a need.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of times when you know, if you don't have something put away, even when Paul's talking to the church at Corinthians, you know, he says, lay by in store. The idea is have some money set aside so that when I come or when the need specifically presents itself, you're not like everybody rummaging through their pockets and coming up with like three nickels.
Because that's what you're going to have if you don't lay by in store. You have three nickels when he comes by.
Yeah, exactly. So, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of a fundamental thing. Let's live below our means so that we have some for when our means increases due to no fault or, you know, circumstances that we could control. And the same thing for other people around us.
Yeah. So again, I hope this podcast was helpful for some younger people that are just getting started out. Look, I mean, here's the big three things. Focus on contentment and being happy, to not jump off the debt bandwagon, to just acquire things, to continue that standard of living your parents set. Number two, be careful about how much you spend time trying to acquire things and money, and right, that your family's not paying the price for that. And then number three, I mean, it's tough, but try to save a little bit. And even if it's $10 a month, $20 a month, put something aside to save for others and for yourself. Right. So you don't have to ask the preacher for money, because that's an awkward thing to do.
Can I borrow 10 bucks?
Dude, I got you.
For lunch today?
I got you.
Oh, good. Good.
See, now, just for this moment. But no, and appreciate your feedback. Like anything you guys have, something more you'd like covered, we just don't want you to make bad decisions that we might have made.
Yeah, that's right.
But how come it was only me talking about my bad decisions? Have you never made bad financial decisions?
No, I'm sure some juicy stories that we'll save for advanced topics.
This was me.
Generally, when I do something dumb with money, it's multiple thousands of dollars, not like 500.
You're just giving it to me. That's the problem. That's the dumbest things you've done with your money. So, guys, that's a takeaway from the podcast. If you need to borrow some money, go to Todd, not me.
Good stuff.
That's it. Anything you want to add as we wrap up?
No, sir. Just God bless.